Burnout levels in federal agencies seem to be on the rise as employees deal with the threat of sequestration and the expectation of ever doing more with less. Higher stress levels can negatively affect performance and your health. To beat stress, you've got to understand it. Andrew Chate is an executive education instructor and resilience expert at the Brookings Institution. He'll be speaking there later this morning on some of the factors for causing and managing stress. He joins me now with a preview. Good morning. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Tom. It's a pleasure.
All right. So this idea of resilience, often you hear it applied to both organizations and individuals. What does it mean when applied to individuals?
You know, we've been doing this research now for over 20 years, and we finally feel like we have a little bit of a handle on it. And resilience is really comprised of seven major things. Firstly, your ability to control your emotions when you're under the gun in the midst of an adversity. And secondly, to be able to control your behaviors under the same situation in order to remain goal-focused. We know that problem-solving is key. We know that a belief in yourself, a sense of self-efficacy and mastery is key. We know that optimism that's realistically grounded is also important. We know that empathy and social networking is an important piece of resilience. And finally, the willingness and ability to take on opportunities and challenges. And what we find is that those seven things are absolutely primary, but they can take a beating when things are tough.
And can those types of behaviors and responses to stress and so forth be learned by people, or do you kind of have it inherently that you're going to blow your stack when something goes wrong or whatever?
Yeah, these things are learned. We know that from our research, and we know that we can unlearn bad habits around them as well. And as it turns out, the key is really in how we think. We develop from the time that we can think habits in our beliefs and our thinking styles. And we know that some of those habits can get in the way of those seven qualities that make us resilient. And often they're very unconscious, so we're not really aware that we've slipped into these bad habits. But if we can put those bad habits in front of people, show them what they're doing, and then teach them a fairly simple compensatory skill to get around those bad habits, we see resilience go way up.
Because you don't see a lot of this type of training or activities happening in federal agencies very often. Most of the training is technical, focused on, you know, how to use the credit card program or rules for travel, this kind of thing. Is this something that institutions ought to be introducing maybe more as a way of getting people more resilient and able to deal with what the organization might be facing?
Well, yes, Tom, I may be a little biased on this, but I do believe it's a really core competency. Resilience is absolutely foundational. So you can slot in a lot of those other trainings, but if you're training people who are not at that point resilient, a lot of those dollars are going to be wasted. And the reality is that through Brookings Executive Education, we've been running these programs in resilience since 2006. They've been really well received, and they've been effective.
And you must have some federal executives coming through there from time to time also.
We absolutely do. Executive education is offered to all levels of federal government, but we have intact teams coming through. We have groups. We have individuals who are working towards their masters through Brookings.
And are there special conditions in federal agencies, especially since they are under a lot of budgetary and other types of stress these days? Do they have conditions that are maybe different from what you might find in the private sector that contribute to possible stress?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we found that when the recession hit in 2009, that resilience levels in the private sector dropped significantly, but were relatively preserved in federal government. And that kind of makes sense. The impact wasn't the same. But then a few years later, when there were fiscal cliffs and sequestration, then we saw the dent occurring in resilience in the federal government. So they do have unique stresses. The reality is that if you look at the 10 or so factors that lead people to be happy and satisfied in their jobs, things like getting a fair salary for the work that you do, things like having autonomy, having teeth as a leader, being able to make decisions, hiring and firing decisions, not being at the whim of budget cuts. If you look at these 10 or so variables that emerge again and again as leading people to be happy and satisfied in their jobs, federal government employees have around about none of them.
And how do we measure the stress levels or the lack of resilience in a given organization?
Well, we have developed inventories, validated inventories that can measure that. And the interesting thing about that is that even though we see that there are often conditions in place that could lead federal government employees to be dissatisfied. They're among the most satisfied workers in the country. And I think one of the wellsprings of resilience for them is the meaning of the work that they do. They're not manufacturing soda. They're not selling used cars, with all due respect to people in those industries. Our federal government employees are doing extremely meaningful work. Now, sometimes that can get drowned out in the noise of the political system. But if they are able to tap into that sense of meaning and contribution, then we see resilience scores, satisfaction scores go way up.
We're speaking with Andrew Chate. He's an executive education instructor and resilience expert at the Brookings Institution. And federal agencies managers complain often about how hard it is to get people into the government. It's a long, difficult hiring process. Applicants say that it's slow because of the KSAs, the knowledge, skills, and abilities essays. And so when you are a manager presented with someone and they have the right KSAs, which says technically on paper they can do the job for which you're considering them, is there a way to assess the level of resilience or the ability of the person in front of you to confront and deal with stress? Is that something you can tease out of a job interview or some other application process?
Yes, I believe that you can present people with scenarios that they're likely to face in the job and ask them how they would go about facing those problems and those adversities. And if you were able in the answer to get a sense of those seven qualities, you know, that emotion regulation, that ability to control behaviors, good problem solving, and the like, then you would have a pretty good look at whether that person is going to be able to rise to the occasion when they're experiencing an adversity. But I also believe that resilience can be trained. So if you have someone who has all the technical skills, then you can bring them up to speed on resilience with a fairly simple few steps. This is not rocket science, and it's not a difficult process to be able to boost someone's level of resilience.
Because it seems like having that resiliency and the ability to control emotions in a stressful situation depends. It seems to me it's almost like remembering names. If you remember to remember, then you're better at remembering the person's name you were just introduced to than if you forget to remember.
That's exactly right. So we know that these bad habits that creep into our thinking that can lead us to lose that emotional control or that behavioral control or can lead to a slide down into bad problem solving, we know that those things, those bad habits and thinking become very automated over time. So the key in helping someone become more resilient is to show them those bad habits and then replace those bad habits with good habits that are equally automated. So that it's not effortful and that they slip into that skin as comfortably as they do the old maladaptive skin.
And so if suppose someone has an assistant secretary who's a political appointee who's really abrasive, and every time they walk in and open their mouth, you know, one's adrenaline starts to fire. What are some specific things that the employee at that level can do when here comes old Joe or Mary and you know they're going to make your adrenaline go through the roof? What can you do in anticipation of that?
Well, the first thing is to take a step back and take a deep breath. Be prepared. I always believe that being prepared, knowing the kinds of situations that push your buttons is key. And then secondly, know what your button pushes are. For me, for example, I tend to be an anger guy. And that's because I've learned a thinking style of scanning for violation of my rights. And if I scan long and hard enough, I'm going to find it even if it's not there. And I'm also going to exacerbate a violation that truly is there. So I know if I walk into that meeting with that assistant secretary and something is said that I perceive as a violation, I'm likely to get angry. But now I can say to myself as it's happening, you know, I have a violation of rights radar that's making this worse. I need to just get through this conversation and then assess this later at my desk. And there are a number of different thinking styles that may be coming into play there. We know that people have large-scale belief systems like the world should be fair or I should be treated with respect at all times. And when these things get pushed, they can end up behaving in ways that are not resilient. So understanding that you have that button push, being aware that it could be activated in that moment, and having a ready-made automatic formula to step around it is really key.
And so you're not someone we should step in front of in the Starbucks line then, for example.
Well, that would be ill-advised. But but the reality is that over time I've come to be able to control these things. So it's significantly less of an issue for me than it would have been once. And, you know, for some people it's anger. For others it's anxiety or embarrassment, guilt, shame, sadness. Frustration is in epidemic proportions in this country. And we know that that's getting activated by radars around doing more with less, which obviously is a federal government concern now that we're not filling vacancies. So we're aware of these sorts of things brewing.
So it sounds as if one of the great investments a federal manager could make then is some training in this particular area that to the main people there. It sounds like it's something that can be done fairly quickly and might cause you a lot of good results down the line when things get tough.
Once again, I would declare my bias here, but yes, absolutely. And Brookings Executive Education offers these courses. And we know that the trainings are fun and they're lively and interactive. They're very skills-based and they're sticky. So we know that this stays with people for years.
And what's your feeling about, I don't know, say a pet rock or an amulet or a bracelet or something that someone can touch or rub or look at to remember the good ways of responding to stressful situations? Does that really hold water?
I'm a firm believer in whatever works, but that amulet has to be a reminder of something solid and tangible. And unfortunately, I think a lot of attempts to boost resilience or to help people manage stress tend to be at the behavioral level, and they tend to be Band-Aids. What we believe is very key is to actually get to thinking style. That's the root cause. It's upstream. And if we can teach people skills to be able to deal better with their thinking, we'll have permanent downstream effects. And if that pet rock reminds you that you have a violation of rights anger radar, then more power.
And so the rock is not the cause of the lack of stress, but it just triggers you to change your thinking because it, as a reminder, more or less.
That's exactly right. And you know, there are as many stress management techniques as there are people. But by and large, when you go under the covers and look at those that have lasting effects, they involve controlling your thinking and controlling your emotions.
All right. Well, I think I might go to eBay and see if there's any pet rocks for sale, you know, after all these years. Andrew Chaté is an executive education instructor and resilience expert at the Brookings Institution. Thanks so much for that insight.
It's a pleasure, Tom. Thank you.